20 دسامبر 1990 مصاحبه دوم با آقای منصور فرهنگ، برنامه تاریخ شفاهی بنیاد مطالعات ایران، مصاحبه کننده مهناز افخمی، نیویورک.
Let me retract just for a moment to explain my contact with Yazdi. I had spent some time with him in Neuf-le-Château in late December and early January 79, and we remained in contact, and I went to Iran. On January 16, I returned to the States. Not on January, sorry, on the end of the same day that Khomeini actually arrived in Tehran. I left earlier. I went back to California and my term started. About 2 or 3 months later, when Yazdi became the foreign minister after resignation of Sanjabi, he had given me a couple of missions. One was a conflict developed in the Iranian embassy in Canada between the newcomers, largely students who were active in Islamic Student Association, liberal, was that one type of students, who ran into conflict with the regular foreign ministry officials. And he called me and said, here is this conflict, can you go there and try to reconcile and settle? And I encouraged the idea of settling conflicts between the newcomers and the professional diplomats. I responded to him, you know, on the phone. I'm in Sacramento, folks, California, and he's in Tehran. I said, you know, if you really want this approach to be effective, it would be helpful to have a respected diplomat accompany me, that if we go together as a team to Canada. He welcomed the idea. He thought it's a very good idea. I said, regardless of what I try to do, I will be associated with the dissidents, with the newcomers, regardless of my own background and orientation. And that perception is very important. So he welcomed the idea and asked a respected Iranian diplomat, apparently who was at the time Iranian consulate in Chicago, Mansour Shahneh. So he called him up and made arrangement that the two of us go to Canada. So we went to Ontario, attempted to settle, and we failed. And we failed. It's very ironic because the professional diplomats who had gone on strike, just listen to the orientation, they were on the strike, and these three or four students who had no experience in handling the affairs of the embassy or the consulate, they were somehow managing the business. And it was the poor management and the inability to respond to the request of Iranians there to satisfy their needs and so forth, that the old-timers, the professionals, thought they had the upper hand. So I explained to them that that's not really the issue, and the important thing to me and to you should not be whether or not this conflict is settled. The important thing is that it's after the revolution and the Iranian foreign ministry is interested in reconciliation. And this idea is very unpopular in Iran. It's your responsibility, and it should really be your obligation to welcome this idea and respond to it positively. Anyway, they categorically rejected. What they wanted was to complete the dismissal of the newcomers and technique. So it was the first mission was a failure. So I returned to California and wrote a long letter to Yazdi explaining that here was the situation and we failed because one side refused to negotiate, and the student, the Islamic, the Muslim Student Association in general, and these members who were involved in the embassy, they were really open. One of them today is he is chairman of the central bank in Iran today. At that time he was the chief. He was a graduate student at New School for Social Research. He was studying economics. I've forgotten his name, but he is chairman of the central bank. I will remember, you know, his name. He was very open, and he's much more of a Bazargan type of Muslim than the fundamentalist type. Anyway, that mission failed. In mid-April, Yazdi called me again and said, are you interested in a post in Washington? And I said, like what? He said, you know, being ambassador to Washington. And I said, I shouldn't be, and I really don't want to be, because I'm an American citizen. You know, I have dual nationality, I have both Iranian and American passports, but I don't think that's really appropriate for me to give up, to surrender my U.S. citizenship here and become, you know, the ambassador. At the same time, in all genuineness, after being away from Iran for 20 years, my deep desire was to return. You know, it was more, you know, personal, existential than political. Just to spend, I had already secured a year of sabbatical to go to Iraq for, and I could also extend it for another year to see what would develop. And I said no, for both personal and political reasons, that he accepted my, he also had dual nationality, you know, himself. By that time he had probably, you know, surrendered or relinquished his American citizenship. So in June I went to Iran. This was my background in working with the foreign ministry and Yazdi after he became the foreign minister. So when I went to Iran in June, I had very informal contact with him. I saw him a couple of times, and I went to the university and looking for possibilities of a teaching in the position for a year, with the real intention, the desire of engaging in some research and writing. And in mid-August, he called me and said, we are going to Cuba to participate in the Non-Allied Heads of States Conference, and Bazargan is not coming, and I am actually leading the Iranian delegation. Would you be interested in joining us as a political advisor? And I said, sure, it's a, you know, great idea. It was only a 1 week, you know, conference. Well, I like to go to Cuba, and in this type of, I've been, you know, teaching this kind of stuff, it's not a bad idea for me to have some exposure to it, sure. So we went to Cuba, and when we were in Cuba, the conference was over in early September. It was late of August 79 to early September, and from there, initially we were planning to go back to Tehran. Then he said, you know, we have to go to the UN General, you know, Assembly meeting, and this would be our first participation. It's extremely important, and so forth. Would you be interested in going there? All in a very informal, there was no written statement that I've been, you know, appointed to anything, but to, as an advisor or leader, and there was also no salary involved yet. So he said, would you be interested in going there to organizing and preparing a speech and all that? And I said, sure, it's not a problem. And this was at that time that I actually obtained a diplomatic visa to enter the United States, which was a de facto relinquishment of my citizenship, which it's necessary to do it outside the country. You know, that when you relinquish your citizenship, you can legally return, come back to the States, but it means you're in a foreign country and obtaining visa to come. So I did that, and when I came here, I thought it was ethically proper to complete it, so I followed the paperwork procedure and completed it here. But the act, the decisive act, was done in Cuba by obtaining a diplomatic visa and a with a diplomatic passport. First, I went to Washington, then from there to the UN. We waited until in October. Yazdi came out, actually, he wrote the speech that he delivered, and we translated it. I actually went to the booth and read the speech in English, and he delivered it in Persian. And we were, it was very informal, or this whole experience was informal, but I remember very distinctly that already conflicts had developed, both in the embassy in Washington and in the mission in New York, between the old-timers and the newcomers, particularly with respect to the issue of women and hijab. So when Yazdi was in Washington, I asked him, I said, this is really a sensitive issue, and it's extremely important that your government is not associated with this imposition. We should have a meeting, and this kind of instruction and explanation that we respect freedom of choice should come from you. And he welcomed the idea. So we had a big meeting in the residence on Fifth Avenue. And he invited, it was his own idea, he said, let's invite everybody from Washington, anybody you can. So all the people from Washington and mission congregated here. And yes, he talked about the need for cooperation and reconciliation, and there is no intention on the part of Bazargan government to expel the people from the positions because they worked with, in fact, he went on explaining how important cooperation is. That the mission that went to one person who accompanied us from Tehran to Cuba was Mehdi Ekstasi. In fact, I got to know him very quickly. We became good friends. So, in that sense, he was doing his best to create a sense of trust and cooperation. And one specific thing he said was this matter of hijab. He said, listen, we objected to the excesses of the Pahlavi regime. We obviously think that in any formal organization and governmental business, there should be some minimal observance of customs and values of the society and so forth. But that does not mean hijab at all, And there should be no pressure on women who work in the mission, or from people who were answering the telephone to the diplomats. And there were a number of people who were still working in both places, and I knew virtually all of them, the women who were very disturbed and concerned about this. So his suggestion was immediately, his suggestion created a friction within the new staff of the mission and the embassy, because they consisted of two types. The very fanatic fundamentalist type, who observed these rituals in the household, and for them the rituals and hijab and real strict observance of these rules constituted an essence of the new regime, and those who were liberal religious types. And the best example, illustration with the Bazargan type of religious people and the fundamentalists. And I remember one person, Mohammad Lavasani, who has a very high position today in Washington, and he was connected with some religious figures in Qom, that he was shocked that Yazdi said hijab is not at all required. So it was the beginning of watching that how deep the differences were within the technocratic, professional, bureaucratic type who were joining the new regime. So I was here. From there, I returned to California, and I was on sabbatical officially. So that was the good thing, that being on sabbatical, being paid without having to work, it was a great deal of freedom and leeway. So Yazdi returned to Iran. I stayed here And I had some person of my children buried in California. I visited them and came back and was planning to return to Iran. That hostage taking that took place. When the embassy was initially seized, I was in Washington. When the Shah first admitted to the United States and the demonstrations began. So the issue kind of dominated our thinking, our interaction and plans and so forth until the hostage taking began. The hostage taking was a real embarrassment for the liberal types who had supported the revolution, particularly those of us who were involved in human rights activities. Even with people like Ramsey Clark and Richard Falk, who were extremely helpful to us in propagating our views about human rights violations under the Shah. So I began to some kind of activity, both as a kind of a public, political, academic type who tried to undermine the importance of this thing, wishing, hoping that it will last a few days, that the embarrassment will not last very long. At the same time, the longer it went on, the first couple of weeks, an effort to find a solution to the problem. And with contact, Yazdi fell, and Yazdi was replaced by Bani Sad, and I knew Bani Sad quite well, and when I talked to him, I was convinced that he was also very interested in solving the hostage crisis. So he decided to come to New York when he became foreign minister. Bani Sad was interested in solving the hostage crisis, but at the same time he was trying to use the situation, whether he was conscious of it or not is really beside the point, to expand his role and to present himself to the international community as the principal spokesman of the Iranian revolution and so forth. And for him, coming to the UN, to the Security Council, defending the Iranian position, not the hostage crisis, but trying to explain why such action took place in Iran and connected to American foreign policies toward Iran since 1953 and all that. In a sense, for him, the image was Mossadegh. And Mossadegh's appearance before the Security Council, that image, that romantic view of the past, and which was extremely important for Mossadegh intellectuals, very much motivated and encouraged Bani Sad to undertake this mission. And he sent two people to New York, Ahmad Salamatian and Saeed Sanjabi. So they joined me. The three of us in New York. No, I was nothing. Absolutely no position. It was all a very informal volunteer kind of thing. Because after Yazid, if you were my direct contact and all that was terminated. But all this time, it was in the nature of the situation that sometimes people in the nominal position of authority could appoint people or bring other people to nominal positions of prominence without really having any responsibility or any kind of even legal definition, official definition of their duty. No, absolutely not. Up to this point there was no... Well, in the sense that I had a diplomatic passport, that would signify something, but I don't know what it meant at the time. So the three of us worked together, and with wartime, he set a date, and Bani Sad was coming to New York, and we were waiting for him. And we had developed a strategy of what he should say before the Security Council, and my whole position and the three of us completely agreed that he should say nothing to be interpreted as a defense of the hostage taking, that we should use this occasion as a face-saving device to end the hostage crisis and gain some symbolic victory from this confrontation with the United States. We were kind of acting and thinking like political animals, but in a very amateurish kind of way, simply because we had no experience in this type of, not knowing that, you know, all we were doing here could go down the drain by the simple decision of someone else. In Iran, a good number of people are returning, because at the time I did not know this, but later I learned that the idea that Bani Saad is going to New York representing Iran in the Security Council and reacting Mossadegh's performance during the oil crisis of the early 50s was unacceptable to Bani Saad's competitors in Iran. So a good number of them went to Khomeini and asked him and urged him to discourage, in fact, and stop Bani Saad. So, and Bani Saad was not aware of this. He was the foreign minister only for about 10 days or 2 weeks or something. So we were waiting and hopeful in New York. In the evening of the day, I do not remember the day, in the evening of the day, the evening before Bani Saad was going to leave Iran, he goes to Qom to say goodbye to Khomeini. But by this time, Khomeini had already been persuaded that the trip should be cancelled. And Khomeini tells Bani Saad, don't go. Bani Saad, who is a kind of a stubborn cat, he says, we absolutely have to go, and this hostage crisis has to end. This is an opportunity for us to gain some symbolic benefit from this confrontation, and we should do it. And Khomeini says categorically, no, even if you go without my permission. He gets angry and tells them, if you go without my permission, I will fire you. Dastur khal'to sadir mikanam. When you get off the plane in New York, you're no longer foreign minister. And then Bani Saad says, then I resign now. And that's exactly where he didn't apparently return to his post from Qom. So he resigned. So we were really very disappointed and shocked that all this work we had done for a week was completely dismissed by Khomeini's decision to reject it.
Were you seeing the American authorities
here? No, no. You see, they were very lukewarm about the Security Council. They, on the one hand, they wanted to accept it if it would lead to the release of the hostages. On the other hand, it was politically disadvantageous for the Carter administration. Remember that Carter was getting ready to gain the Democratic, to be renominated, and he was challenged by Kennedy. And Teddy Kennedy was already campaigning against him in New England and New Hampshire, and he was using the hostage crisis as a way of discrediting Kinder Carter as an indecisive and vacillating kind of person. And Carter had become very sensitive to this issue. So they were not sure if they wanted to do this. An American ambassador was McHenry at the time, and he was not particularly decisive or a man of initiative of his own. I'll tell you about it because I had a conversation with him on the phone later that he was incapable of understanding what I was talking about. Anyway, we failed. Sanjabi and Salamatian went back, and I talked to a couple other people, again continued my effort to find a way out. Remember that Bani Saad's effort was very much related to his ambition to become president, and the campaign had already started in Iran, and every issue was an instrument of this competition. So people who went to Khomeini to persuade him to call off this meeting and refuse to participate in the Security Council meeting did not really believe the correctness or the feasibility of this action. They simply wanted to discredit Bani Saad. They did not want Bani Saad to get credit from this trip. That was really the primary motive of these people. And I don't want to talk about it. You know, there were a range of people. Some of them could say something quite different in front of Banisadr, but the competition was very stiff. So he resigned and continued his campaign, and Salavatin Sanjavi returned to Iran. I stayed here and continued for another week. I talked to specifically Richard Falk and Tom Ricks, and came up with this scheme of an international commission. So if there is an international commission of inquiry going to Iran, investigating the Iranian charges against the United States and American interference in Iran, such commission could facilitate the release of the hostages and still give Iran something in return. So I went to Iran with this idea, rather developed and written down and all that. Even I had made some suggestions about the composition of the commission. By this time, Ghotbzadeh had become foreign minister. So I went to Tehran and talked to Banisadr, Bazargan, Ghotbzadeh, Yazdi, a number of other people. Yazdi and Banisadr were still in the Revolutionary Council. But these people, it's interesting that during this period, when they were dismissed from their position, from premiership, they were not dismissed from the government. So they continued to be influential in the Revolutionary Council. Up to this stage, the Revolutionary Council as a whole was very much opposed to the continuation of the hostage dinner crisis, including Beheshti and including Rafsanjani, who told me during the same period that the hostage crisis must end soon. And another person who was vehemently against the hostage crisis, the hostage taking and continuation of the crisis, was Ayatollah Montazeri. When I went to Iran, I learned that, and actually Salamatian knew him through his father from, you know, Isfahan. We went to see Ayatollah Montazeri. I also saw him at the foreign ministry, and after explaining to him, because the day that the reason I said it, because the day that I, well, let me retract, because it's an interesting story. So after this, I suggested this proposal. The Revolutionary Council discussed it. They unanimously decided that it's a good idea. Ghotbzadeh said yes, I will appoint you and to go to New York as our representative, as the Iranian delegate, to take part in the formation of this commission, the members of this commission, the agenda of the commission, and what is expected of them, both formally and informally. All of these elements were really in the proposal I had submitted to them.
And you were present actually in the Revolutionary Council?
No, I was not. Not in the Revolutionary Council. My contact was through the foreign ministry, all informal, in Banisadr's Inqilab Islami office, Bazargan, his house, his Bazargan's daughter and son-in-law actually lived in the upstairs of my sister's building. They were renting an apartment for my sister and brother-in-law. So I also knew them even before, long before the revolution, again in an informal kind of way. No, I had nothing to do with the Revolutionary Council, but they discussed it, and three different sources, Banisadr, Bazargan, and Ghotbzadeh, told me that support for the proposal in the Revolutionary Council was unanimous. And we should do this, we should proceed as quickly as possible. So I thought about it, I said, well, you know, it's a... Then I told Ghotbzadeh, as you know, and I know that the Revolutionary Council, and all of you people, you're all irrelevant if Khomeini does not support the idea. And I would accept this responsibility if I can go to Qom and present the idea to Imam, see how he responds. If he gives me his word, if he is fundamentally in favor of the idea, it would be a wonderful challenge for me an experience to go there and engage, you know, in this thing. I was very interested in doing it. And he said, fine. So one day, a couple of days later, it was in early December, we took the helicopter from foreign ministry. There, Moin Fer, who was Minister of Oil, and Muntaziri, who was by this time the heir apparent, the successor to Khomeini, was being groomed and all that. He was a very simple kind of man. And I never thought for a moment that he would play a significant role in Iran. I never thought for a moment, from the first time I met him. So one person that I had some time, I talked to him and I explained to him how hostage taking was defacing the Iranian revolution and discrediting our humanity, and I gave him a very humanistic kind of argument against the continuation of this crisis, as well as what an incredible economic damage this was doing to Iran and to Iranians all over the world, and so on. He listened and then said, do you know about Khatami Tai? And later he also said exactly the same story to Salamatia. He said, do you know about Khatami Tai's brother? I said, no. He said, Khatami Tai's brother decided to be very generous. Khatam Bakhshi. So he invited people, he gave a lot of kharji. He helped people. And the more he helped people, the more they talked about his brother. That Khatami Tai's brother